I will be reading from Genesis 32, verses 24 to 31. You can follow along in your Bible or on the screen as I read the passage aloud for us. So Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip, so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, "Let me go, for it is daybreak." But Jacob replied, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." The man asked him, "What is your name?" "Jacob," he answered. Then the man said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with humans and have overcome." Jacob said, "Please tell me your name." But he replied, "Why did you ask my name?" Then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "It is because I saw the face of God," or face to face, "and yet my life was spared." The sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. This is the word of God.
Thank you. Good morning, church. Will you pray with me? God, I thank you that you come after us, that you meet us where we are, and that this morning, wherever we are, you're here, and that your invitation to us is one that is bold and intimate and close. And Lord, whatever we bring into this room, I just ask God that you would disarm us, give us hands that are open, and courage to be able to look you face to face, look ourselves face to face, and respond with hope, with courage, to the invitation that you give. And Lord, I pray that you would extend time, as I have a lot to say and not a lot of time. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay. I'm really excited this morning because, I'll just put my cards on the table. This is one of my favorite passages in the whole Bible, and getting to teach on it is always just brings me so much joy, which is why I have a lot to say, but I will try to get you all to lunch today. But we are in this series on identity, losing self, knowing self. And a few days ago in our offices, some of us were working, and our executive pastor, Mike, popped his head outside his office and he said, "Who were you guys in high school?" And which actually, that's a very normal, random thing to happen in our office with Mike. But we love Mike. He keeps things fun and entertaining and lovely. But immediately, everyone knew exactly what he was asking. And we were all just kind of sharing, were you a band kid? Were you a jock? And I'm a theater kid. And so I immediately was like, I was a theater kid. I was the president of the Thespian Society at my school. I was I don't know why you guys laughed at that. But as I was reflecting on this conversation we were having, I was a little bit struck by how early in our lives we are formed to orient ourselves to something to be about. In these really formative years of your life, you're told, this is what you're about, this is what matters to you, so this is who you are. You're a theater kid, you're a band kid, you're an athlete. I mean, from the most formative years in your life, we're trained for this. And so then I think it makes a lot of sense that when we start talking about a Christian identity, there's a lot that pops up in us because for years, decades, we have been building an identity around what matters to us, like we've been trained to. And then we start talking about a Christian identity where we're supposed to build an identity around who God says we are, and that threatens all these things that matter to us. And so you might feel a little bit over the last few weeks as we've been in this series, there's some wrestling happening in you because God is asking you to let go of that theater kid, to let go of being in tech, to let go of your role as a parent, to let go of these identities that are not bad things, but maybe have become the ultimate thing, and they're sacred to us. And so you're in this wrestle of I don't want to let go of it, this is mine, and what am I supposed to do? Or maybe for the last few weeks, you have sat in service and smiled and nodded and left and been I have no idea what we just talked about. this is like so abstract and like meta, and I can't, when someone says, what was the sermon about? You're like, I have to listen to the podcast and then I'll let you know because I just can't come up with the words. And I notice that a lot of you are being quiet, but I'm gonna assume you have felt that way because I have felt that way. It's been so, it's complex and it's nuanced, and it's like trying, like talking about our identity is a little bit like trying to explain water, where you're like, it's watery. Like it just, it is. Like I can't explain to you what it is, just splash around in it, it's water. I can explain it to you like scientifically, right? I can give you like the elements that make it up, but that doesn't capture what water is. In the same way that we can talk about identity theologically, psychologically, emotionally, but that doesn't capture what it is. We need to like experience it. We need to see flesh and bone on it in action to be able to like process and respond to it. And so my hope is that as we talk about Jacob, this will put some flesh and bone on what we've been talking about. Give us an example of what it looks like to walk through the wrestling of our identity, which is not to say that Jacob is a good example of that we should follow. Jacob is kind of the worst. And God had something he was doing in Jacob's life, which should be encouraging to us, because one thing that I think is really interesting is like Jacob is not having an identity crisis in the same way that maybe when you walked into church 5 weeks ago, you were not having an identity crisis. And then all of a sudden we're like talking about identity and you're like, I was fine and now I'm not. But even though Jacob didn't necessarily like have this existing need to clarify his identity, God had something to say about his identity. And Jacob is like in this crisis, and God's like, yeah, I see your crisis, but you need to change first. And so some of us need to like walk into that. So Jacob is not like the prime example of all things, but he is an example of something. And so today we're gonna talk a little bit about this moment in Jacob's life and his interaction with God as they wrestle. So a few things you need to know about Jacob. I was gonna do just like a super deep dive. I love Jacob. I like resonate with Jacob, which probably doesn't tell you very good things about me. But I just, for whatever reason, my whole life, I get him, which I'm not the worst, but like I'm a person and I'm broken and like, I get Jacob. I get the way he thinks. I understand the way he moves. And God is merciful. Thank you, Jesus. But here's what you need to know about Jacob. We don't have time to like do the deep, deep dive. Here's the like high flyover stuff. The first thing you need to know about Jacob is that God has made promises to Jacob, about Jacob, before Jacob was even born. Jacob is born into a family that God has said, made a promise to Abraham, to Isaac, now to Jacob, that you are gonna be this fatherhood of a new nation that's going to be the like outpouring of God's story. You're gonna make a way for God to come and rescue all mankind through your family. That promise has been made and reaffirmed to Jacob, even before he was born. And then even in Jacob's adulthood, God's gonna come to him and say, hey, I made you this promise, I'm gonna be with you. I'm gonna do this, I'm doing this, it's happening, I'm not giving up on you, reaffirming that promise to Jacob. The second thing you need to know about Jacob is he does not believe a word of it. He is like completely, everything he does will be in an effort to try to like shortcut or fast forward these promises that God has made. He doesn't trust that God is up to this. He's not like looking to God to do it. He's like, I got this, I can pull it off. I've got a plan, which brings me to the third thing you need to know about Jacob. He's a hustler. He's just like, he's a man with a plan. He will come, he's a twin. He comes out of his mother's womb literally grabbing the heel of his brother. So they name him heel grabber or Jacob. And it will like come to mean manipulator, deceiver, circumventer. And again, as somebody who resonates with Jacob, I don't love all those takes on his name. I prefer to think of him as creative problem solver. Because he is, like if you look, read his story, Genesis 25 to 32 is like some of the best writing in the Old Testament, it's so good. But if you look at his story, like he gets kind of in these weird positions and he's like, I got it, and he like hustles his way out. That's a gift, but not the gift that Jacob needed. So, and I mean like there is the one time he like outright stole his brother's blessing, but it was his mother's idea. So I think we need to do a little bit of like grace on Jacob because God had grace on him, so we can too. Okay, those are all the things you need to know about Jacob. We jump into our text, and here's a little bit of how we're gonna go through this. There's kind of two movements. One, we're gonna like look at what Jacob did. And if you're a note taker, today's gonna be a really good day for you because I'm gonna literally like say, here's what we do, and then you can take a note, okay? Very simple, like, because that's what we're talking about, right? All of this like abstract stuff about our identity might leave us in a position to feel like, what am I supposed to do with that? That's my favorite question to ask. What am I supposed to do with that? So we're gonna ask it. Really practical things. What did Jacob do? What do we do with that? That's gonna be our first section of our time together. And then the second section of our time is gonna be looking at who God is. Because I'll just say this now, this is giving away like my impact moment at the end, but that's okay. All of this is irrelevant if God is not the one doing it. You can't change your identity. The world is telling you you can. Culture is telling you it's your job. It's not. You can't. You were designed and called to be one thing that is God's job to unlock. But there are things we can do to position ourselves to receive that. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Okay, so our text, which you can put up on the screen, or if it's in, I highly recommend opening a Bible. It's a very good thing to do. But if you don't want to, here it is. So Jacob was left alone. Great, first thing, Jacob is alone. This is a very important moment. Right before this passage starts, Jacob is on his way home after a long time, and he was on the run from his brother, who wanted to kill him because he stole his blessing. And while he was away, he developed a big family and a lot of wealth and animals and servants. And God tells him it's time to go home, so the whole crew starts to make their way back, and Jacob hears that his brother Esau is coming his direction with 400 men, which, if I'm Jacob, that is not good news. So we see Jacob, like, he like jumps into plan mode, because again, man with a plan, creative problem solver. He's like, okay, here's what we're gonna do. All of my family and animals and servants, we're gonna break up into groups. The ones I love, you're gonna go in the back. Again, you should just read this stuff. It is so good. But he says to the first group, you're gonna go and you're gonna see Esau and you're gonna say, Esau, remember your brother Jacob? He's a family man now. Look, he has children and animals. Do you want some sheep? Have some sheep. Give him the sheep. And then this is like what the Bible says. Jacob's like, if he kills that group, group B, you go. And you're like, Esau, like, remember Jacob? He's a family man now and have some sheep. And like he literally comes up with this plan and says to himself, if Esau kills one, at least I'll have others, okay? So Jacob sends all of these guys, his family, his wives, his children, ahead of him, and he is left alone on the other side of the river. This is really important because Jacob needed to be alone. Not in the sense like he needed a minute, in the sense that like God said, you need to be by yourself. You have so much going on. There is so many distractions. There is so much that you are wrapped up in. You cannot hear what I'm trying to say to you. You need to be alone. And so the first thing that we need to do is we need to pursue silence and solitude. And I fully realized that when I said that, many of us tightened every bone in our muscle in our body, because silence and solitude is not our favorite thing. And some of us actually, it would be our favorite thing, but you're like, I have children, silence and solitude doesn't exist. That's fair, I get that. And there is something essential to getting quiet and to pulling back every distraction. We need it. Ruth Haley Barton talks about how our souls are like little forest animals that like hide under bushes and they don't come out until the woods are quiet. They don't feel safe. And so when everything quiets down, it's like our little soul can kind of peek out and be like, what's out there? What's going on? And for God to do this really vulnerable and sacred essential work in us, we need that kind of stillness and quiet. This is some of what's been really important in our digital fast for Lent. I don't know if you guys experienced this. I live alone, so my whole life is silence and solitude. And which I know for some of you are like, well, that sounds amazing. You know what? Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's really boring. Like when you say, I'm not gonna have any screens on for the next 6 weeks, and I'm just alone in my apartment staring at a wall. And the only things I can hear are all the anxiety and what ifs and worries and to-do lists that are running through my brain. Then living alone is not so great. But silence and solitude invites those things to come out so that God can meet us where we actually are, so that he can meet those actual things. We need that kind of quiet to be able to hear him. Not so that he'll speak. He's already speaking. We just are usually moving at such a pace and with so much noise that we just cannot hear it. We're not attentive to it. We're not paying attention to him. And so silence and solitude, like, invites us, like, it's required of us to be able to to hear that. And it will be uncomfortable. It will make us squirm. It might be boring at first a lot, or still be boring. But there's something that needs to happen for everything to get peeled back so that we can pay attention to what God's doing. And I'll call out that I know that for some of us, does anyone feel like I'm not really an emotional person, but when I'm at church, I'm so emotional? Yeah, that's an uncomfortable silence because you all feel it. Has it occurred to you that this might be like a place, one of the few places where those distractions are pulled aside, where your soul can settle? And as your soul settles, there's stuff that comes up that God's like wants to bring to your attention. And this is a sacred, safe, quiet place for that to happen. That's a good thing. But this is not the only place that can happen. That can happen in your living room. You just might need to turn off a screen or lock yourself in a closet for a minute, you know? Okay, that's the first thing. Jacob got alone. The second thing, Jacob entered in. Now, you can put the text back up if you want, but the second thing, if I'm Jacob, and I tend to run a bit anxious, which I think Jacob does too. Again, he and I think have a similar vibe in life. And if I'm him and I know that my brother who wants to kill me because I stole something from him is after me with 400 people, and then it's nighttime and I'm alone and a strange man starts coming at me, I am running. I'm not staying. I'm not asking any questions. I'm out. You, whatever, you can sleep here. That's fine. I want nothing to do with whatever this person brings. Not Jacob. Jacob is like, bring it. He like gets all up in. He enters in to whatever this man has to do. And, you know, Jacob does not know in the moment. And I think that for us, the second thing we need to do is we need to be willing to enter in. Most of us, when things get hard or when we are confronted with something uncomfortable, whether that's in a relationship, in our walk with the Lord, in our lives, in our work, in our friendships, our knee-jerk is like, get out. This is uncomfortable. This is hard. I'm out. I don't want to deal with this. Too messy. No, thank you. Maybe that's not you, though. Maybe you're not a fleer, but maybe you're an avoider, right? Something hard comes up, and you're like, okay, well, if I don't ever bring up this thing, then this will never escalate. So I'm just going to avoid this topic altogether, or I'm going to avoid this person altogether. Or maybe if I just like stay on my socials and I'm constantly scrolling, I'll never have to like pay attention to that little voice in the back of my head that's like, you really should deal with this thing. Maybe that's how you respond to those things. Or maybe when hard things come up, you double down. You're like in a power stance with your arms folded and you're like, bring it. What? There's no problem. I have no problems. You have a problem. And you double down, you refuse to move, you're not engaging, you're just holding your ground, and if you have a problem with that, then you can leave. None of those responses are going to really produce much change. They're actually not going to produce much of anything, any of them. Jacob enters in. He shows up and says, whatever it is, I'll be in. I'll do it. And I think that there's something in that for us too. We have to enter in. It's a little bit like, I think, you see some of those responses to people when they're sick. There are some people that like when they're sick, they just like, they turn off the lights, they go to sleep for 4 days. They're like, maybe when I wake up, everything will be okay. Maybe sometimes that works. Then there's people who they're like, I'm not sick, I have allergies, right? And they're just like coughing and sneezing everywhere. And you're like, oh my gosh, take a freaking medicine, you know? And then there's people who are like, I'm not sick. I don't have allergies. If you don't like coughing and sneezing, you can wear a mask. Like, they put it on you, right? They're like, this is your problem. I'm just existing in the world where sneezes happen, which is true. Sneezes happen. But if you don't ever go to the doctor, you will never heal. If we refuse to acknowledge that there's something for us to engage in, we can't get what's on the other side of it. If all this could be solved by an antibiotic, don't you just want to go and get the antibiotic? There's something about showing up that unlocks whatever is on the other side of that. And Jacob showed up. We need to enter into it too. The third thing that Jacob did, and this is my favorite part, Jacob unashamedly asked for more. This moment in the story like changed my life. When I like read this and like registered what was happening, it was like game-changing for me. Because Jacob just doesn't show up and like wrestle with God and God's like, you know, slams him on the floor and says, like, get it together, man, and then walks away. That God, like, is in there with Jacob, and that Jacob is wrestling, and then Jacob demands something of God. I will not let you go unless you bless me. How dare you? He's like the God of the universe, and you're like demanding things from him? And God doesn't smote him? God doesn't say like, how dare you? I mean, again, giving it away. He gives him the blessing that Jacob just brought all of his angst and frustration and anger and disappointment, all the fear and anxiety, brought it right up to God, literally like all up on God, and then had the audacity to say, bless me, and I will not stop until you bless me. Man, like, am I allowed to do that? And as I read this passage, I think that the what we do here is, well, one, we need to get real, and two, we need to ask for more. We need to get real because, like with ourselves and with God, because the thing is, and this is actually cool to me, Jacob making that demand revealed to Jacob as much about Jacob as it was a request. Jacob had to acknowledge, I don't have what I have been working for. I've worked my whole life to try to like accomplish this thing and it's not working. I don't have it and I want it and I can't get it for myself. You need to give it to me. For some of us, acknowledging that there is something that we want that we have not been able to get for ourselves is a really vulnerable thing. It's painful. It means acknowledging like that we can't do it. We have limits. We have like a top of our capacity. It means owning that there's longing that has gone unmet. That's a really vulnerable thing. And if we can't fully acknowledge our own longing, disappointment, frustration, exhaustion, then we can't fully see God meet those things because we're in denial that they exist. And so Jacob has to face the reality that everything he's done has failed. And that there's a longing he still has, and that God has the ability to meet, and he will not give up until God extends to him that longing. That is a bold move. But that is a move that you and I have been invited into. In Ephesians, it says that through Jesus, by faith, we are allowed to enter in and ask of God with confidence and freedom. You can make that kind of demand of God. He can handle your frustration and your anger and your disappointment and your longing. Now, he might not say, no problem, got you. But he will hear you and he will respond like we see him do with Jacob. Not in the way that Jacob probably had anticipated. But we have been invited to make that kind of request of God, even demand. Might not turn out the way we want, but something about breaking into that space in us unlocks something in us, unlocks something between us and God as well. And this is the last thing Jacob did before we move on to who God is. Jacob was broken. Not in the sense that like, oh, Jacob was a broken man. Yeah, we know that. Jacob was broken. Got it. Jacob got broken. God broke Jacob. Jacob was clinging onto him, fighting with him, wrestling with him, and God put his hand on his hip and broke it. And there's something in that that before God could bless Jacob, God had to break Jacob. And that kind of sucks for us. We don't like being broken. We don't want to be broken. A lot of this series that we've been in, we've talked about like the beauty of like discovering ourselves, of knowing our true selves in light of who God is, that our identities that we've built are fragile, that they're temporal, but that God has this beautiful, full identity that he has called us to that we can lean into and like receive and be like grown in. But we haven't talked all that much about the denying, losing yourself half. We've talked about it a little bit. But the reality is that like that's kind of the part that's like not so pretty. But this has been our verse through the series, Matthew 16. Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. Whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life, for me, they'll find it. We like that part. Yeah, finding our life, that sounds good. The losing your life part, that part hurts. I think there's some of us who would look at this interaction with God and Jacob and be like, why'd you have to break his hip, man? Just like let the man walk. You know, doesn't he have his brother's about to kill him? Like, let him have his leg, you know? But there is something about that brokenness that Jacob had to experience to convince Jacob that what he was doing was not working. and he needed to pivot. There's something about the way we function that until we have no options left, we'll keep relying on our own options. And God knew, listen, you're literally facing death, as far as you know, and you still are wrestling. Something in you has to break. And I think that for a lot of us, this is, if you're like maybe wrestling with the Christian faith or you're kind of exploring Jesus, this might be where we lose you. Because you're like, man, I like Jesus. He like has some good ideas. Your church is cool. You know, the coffee's good. And the music's really good. And the preaching is funny and charming. But Dave is so great. But you keep telling me that I can't be who I am, that I need to like die to myself, and this is who I am. Listen, and I like don't mean this rudely, but we're not telling you that. Jesus is telling you that. That is the only way of Jesus. Jesus says, if you want to be my disciple, you have to deny yourself. You have to take up your cross and follow me. If you want to save your life, you're gonna need to lose it. But I promise you that if you lose it, you will actually find it. That is following, that is the only way of him. There is no version of following Jesus that doesn't involve letting go of every other thing. This is the way of Jesus. And that is a hard word, but that's the truth. And, but like there's hope in that, because the thing is, we're not just saying like die to yourself and then be there a blob on the floor, because all of this is met by who God is. That we shed off these parts of us that are actually not our true selves, that are not the like fullness of what God has called us to. We let those things die, and then we get to receive all of who God is. And so we need to reflect on who God is. This is the most important part of all this. So the first thing in this passage of who God is he is a pursuant God. God came after Jacob time and time and time again. There's a time earlier in the story when Jacob is initially on the run from his brother, where he has this dream and God is up on a ladder, like speaking to him, saying, hey, I'm gonna be with you. I'm gonna be for you. I am doing this. And then here again, Jacob is in this moment where God is coming after him. Jacob was disobedient. He was harmful to others. He was faithless. God did not give up on him. God came after him over and over and over again. He did not deserve it, but God came after him. He loved him and pursued him. That God is a pursuing God means that he came after us and will keep coming after us. That his resilient love for us cannot be so easily shaken or discouraged, and that he has his eyes on us and a goodness for us that he will not withhold. That's what it means that God is pursuant of you. But not only did God pursue Jacob, God is an intimate God. And so he was intimate with Jacob. Now, we already talked about Jacob being alone, but being alone is not in itself intimate. Like two strangers in an elevator is not intimate. But wrestling is intimate. I don't know if you've watched a lot of wrestling. Not like WWF, like chair throwing wrestling. Like high school boys wrestling, which this is a tangent, but like the foulest thing I've ever smelled in my whole life was a high school gym during a boys wrestling tournament. It was disgusting. That is not pertinent, but it is true. But maybe it highlights that there's like something really like intimate happening here. But wrestling is like this, it's hard to explain. I'm not a wrestler. I have a brother, so like I've experienced that kind of wrestling, but not like professional wrestling, not like formal wrestling where there are rules and uniforms and headpieces. But wrestling is this thing where like these two people are like interwoven. And their like movement is connected to each other. And when one person moves, the other person moves, and they like leverage all that movement and redirect it. And it's this very, it's almost like a dance, right? Where there's just this like give and take. Wrestling is like really intimate. And I think about how God got up in Jacob's grill and like received all of that physical, like a outpouring of where Jacob was at. Like we talk about how our bodies like hold our emotions or our trauma or our grief. Like anyone, are there teeth grinders in the room? Like I've literally ground through a mouth guard in my sleep. Not a joke, it's cracked in half. Like our bodies hold all this stuff. And so as God comes up to Jacob, the fact that it's this like physical interaction to me is like just kind of beautiful, because God like physically takes on all of what Jacob is experiencing. all of his anger, all of his grief, all of his longing, all of his frustration, all of his exhaustion. I'm a very visual person, and I was trying to find a picture or a piece of art to kind of capture this moment, because there's something about it that's like visceral. I want to see it. And every classical piece of art I found, it was very, the perspective was very far away. Jacob's calves are always bulging out of his body. And it's just, I don't know, it just wasn't that's not it. And then I came across this photo. And it kind of took my breath away. Because this is, I think, probably closer to what that moment was like. That Jacob, exhausted, frustrated, disappointed, longing, anxious, fearful, clings to God with all of these years of all of these things and begs him, please help me. I can't let go until you bless me, until you intervene. I can't let go. And these fat tears just coming down his face. I feel what an incredible God that would come into that moment and hold all of that with Jacob and move with him in it and let Jacob thrash out his anger and take that and hold him in it. The way that you can see God's arm holding around the back of Jacob's head that embraces and holds and cradles all of this. What an intimate God. And that God is intimate means that he invites us and goes with us into a safe place to be fully who we are, fully seen, fully known, fully accepted, and loved, and fought for. This is the intimacy of God that meets us in that gnarly, horrible place and holds us there and wrestles with us there. I said that that the intimate God sees us and accepts us fully who we are, and that's true. But if God were to accept us and then leave us there, that wouldn't be very merciful or good. God is a merciful God. And so rather than leaving Jacob where he is with his bum hip to figure it out with his brother, God extends a mercy to Jacob that he does not deserve. I've often thought about mercy as not getting the outcome that you actually deserve and getting a better outcome than you actually deserve. It's like when I'm looking for parking and I'm circling my block for hours and I can't find a parking spot, and then one opens up and I'm oh God, thank you, you're so merciful. And I take it, that's mercy. And then the next morning when I wake up and I'm street cleaning. And I run out to my car as fast as I can in my pajamas and my hair is all messed. And I don't have a ticket on my window. That is the mercy of God. I deserve a ticket and I didn't get one. God's mercy. This is God's mercy to Jacob, that he didn't just leave him there. That is mercy. That he didn't punish or condemn him for all of his disobedience and his faithlessness. That's mercy. That he then blesses Jacob. That's mercy. God is so merciful and patient and good to Jacob that he would go with him through this process and then would extend to him the fullness that he has for him. That God is merciful means that he stays in the wrestling with us. He does not control or condemn. He patiently, generously is redeeming what's broken in us and calling to life the fullness of who he is and who he has called us to be. This is God's mercy. And so as we talk about this wrestling with our identity, we can't just set our hope on I'll be made better. No, that... It's not just all this up to this point, it's a self-help book, right? Be quiet, pay attention to yourself, be gracious to yourself, forgive yourself. All of this is good, but it's not the thing that transforms us. It's the thing that primes us. But the only thing that will actually transform and change who Jacob is the power of God. It is the only thing. It's not Jacob's hustling, despite his best efforts. It's not his backup plans or that he works really hard. It's not even facing the wrongdoings he's done, even though that is this moment, right? He's literally coming face to face with his wrongdoing with Esau. And that was essential. He had to get to this point where all the other things fell away and he has to kind of face the reality of what he's done. But that's not the thing that transforms him. The thing that transforms him is coming face to face with God and what God extends to him, which is really cool, actually, if we like double click on this moment, and actually this I don't think is in slides, but can we put the teaching text back up? If you look at this moment, this interaction, right at the like moment of pivot, God says to Jacob, "What is your name?" Jacob has to face who he is because his name is deceiver. That's what his name means. That's what he was like birthed into, one who deceives. Jacob has to face the reality of everything he's done. Who are you, Jacob? I'm a deceiver. That's who I am. And God's response to him is not anymore. You will no longer be a deceiver. Now, you will be one who struggles but overcomes. That is your new identity. The new thing that I'm calling you into, it's this. It's not who you were. By my power, by my word, by my blessing, this is the thing you are now. The only thing that can change us is the power of God. And so if over the last 4 weeks you have felt like there's a lot of things that seem really aspirational and good and interesting, but you're not sure how to move in that, take comfort in this. It is God's work to do. There's no new identity you can hustle up for yourself. But receive the reality that there are things that we need to do to prime us for that. There are moments of vulnerability and transparency and honesty, desperation even, that bring us to the feet of Jesus where he can hand us that new identity. Again, it's like going to the doctor. If you're never willing to step foot in the doctor's office, it's gonna be very hard to get that medicine. Part of what's really beautiful about this story is the way that we kind of see it wrap up. After God blesses Jacob, he leaves, and Jacob then, we see, like, he starts to live out of this new identity. And he starts to, he actually runs ahead of all of his groups, which it's a little too late for some of them, but don't worry, Esau didn't kill anybody. But he runs ahead, and he meets up with Esau, and Esau hugs him, embraces him, and they are, like, reunited, and there's forgiveness and tears, and it's beautiful, and Esau's like, what's the meaning of all the sheep? Like, why'd you keep giving, like, who are all these people? And Jacob explaining, I have a family now, and I'm trying to give you this gift because I did so wrong by you. And Jacob says, no, it's okay. And Jacob says, or Esau says, no, it's okay. And Jacob says this. He says a lot of things, but this is like the kicker. God has been gracious to me. I have all I need. Please keep these gifts. Different Jacob. Not the same person we saw at the beginning of this story, that he would stand across from his brother and say, I have what I need. God has been gracious to me. Different person. Different identity. That is not anything Jacob did. That is the power of God at work in his life. This is actually the really beautiful thing about baptism, that as our brothers and sisters get into the water, they come in as their old selves. They say, this is who I was. They go under, they say, like, I claim Jesus. I claim his identity over me, his life over mine. And they go out under the water and they come out. That old person is washed away and they receive the new person that God has called them to be. That's what we celebrate with our brothers and sisters when they get baptized. That's what we embody when we step into the waters of baptism. And so as we close and as the band comes back up, and I'll invite Dave McKinney to come up, we have this opportunity to do something. But the do is not the thing. The do is like what gets us to the place where the thing happens. Because as much as we have this opportunity to do, we have this opportunity to receive. God is a giver of good gifts. He is generous and kind and merciful and pursuant and patient and powerful. And if you have felt overwhelmed, or you have felt stuck in the wrestling, or you have felt threatened in who you are, or you have felt defensive about who you are, there is something that God wants to bring freedom to you in here. We just have to have our hands open to receive that.